seen, matured on the world stage over the past 3 decades, and honored in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So please welcome the Pretenders.
Don't get me wrong.
Well, that's it. We can go home now. I want to say welcome to XM. Let me set the picture here for the XM audience. We're in a different place this week. We're on the stage at Irving Plaza in New York City. The band is kind of behind me here. Audience close by. And as usual, I'm sure they'll want to pop up here and ask a few interesting questions over the next hour. And we'll be hearing some of that great Pretenders music, too. Well, the one thing that I got to start with is you've gone and done it. And people have waited for years for this. You have come out with this this box set. The title is not going to strike everybody in the same way. I think it probably is evocative to people who grew up with really freeform radio are going to really get what pirate radio and that concept is all about, which was DJs picking great music to turn legions of fans onto things that they never had a chance to listen to, and we all grew by this musically, which is how a lot of bands like your band actually got into doing what you were doing. So I'm curious, first of all, and because Martin's holding the microphone here, where this concept came from, because this is, we'll talk about the box set in a minute, but conceptually, this is a pretty interesting idea.
The first thing that I listened to, hello everyone, by the way, good to see you. The first thing I listened to where I heard American music was Radio Luxembourg. They had a few in the shops, but I would only just buy the latest Shadows record or something. But I tuned into Radio Luxembourg, and that pretty much is what we're talking about with pirate radio. And Caroline was another one.
Caroline.
What do you remember of your early listening over there, Adam?
In Leicester, we didn't really have radio, but we'd get drawings sent to us of pop groups. But yeah, in England, a lot of the radio was much freer. In fact, loads of radio was DJs just did what they did. It's only in the last, I don't know, since computers and stuff have come out that everybody has these playlists and stuff. And so radio stations have changed to become, you know, defined of what they are. There's still a few stations left. That Jim Ladd in LA, he plays what he wants to do. And there's probably, you know, other ones all over America, but it's not the regular thing. And I know when we were doing the box set, kind of, it did keep coming up about the whole idea of freedom of music and stuff like that. And Chrissy, when she was growing up, was Ed Under the Covers listening to Detroit radio stations.
Cleveland radio stations.
Well, she had a very powerful radio. Didn't you, Chrissy? Have a go.
Yeah, well, you know, the AM station, the AM frequency picked up a lot of faraway stations. And then in the late 60s, it all, what we called, went underground. And that's, I guess, what the satellite stuff's like now.
More. Satellite stuff is amazing because, you know, it's for those who don't, if you're from living in England, I don't know where you would have this again. It's not like digital radio there. This is really free form. I mean, it's 170 channels of every kind of music you can possibly think of, news, talk, sports. But it's really, the free form has come back to this. But when you were growing up and listening to this music, it was everything. I mean, it was rock, soul, pop, funk, everything all mixed together. So when you went to England, did you take this essence with you when you decided you wanted to do some music? Is that where some of that comes from?
Yeah.
There you go. Now, let me ask, if you guys, being in England at the time, had the same feel. I mean, were you exposed to all of this different kind of music in going into it when you were started to make music?
Just before, around the middle of the 60s, I started to hear more American music. And it was kind of blues then. That's really the music I thought was apt for me to play at the time when I started in 67. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, I wasn't even born.
You weren't even born then. There you go.
It did have a really bad period coming back here after getting in the band and going into stations. And even WMMS, the one that I grew up with, you know, that was really hip in the late 60s. And it had all gone very tits up, really. It was all gone. So that's why if it's coming around now, you know, when things really get bad, that usually is a good sign that something's going to give.
The record business has changed considerably over the years. You guys managed to kind of ride that wave of what was going on in the late 70s. Seymour Stein had a pretty good feel for what was happening with bands in those days. He was kind of a pirate himself, I think, in that case. The first record deal that you guys made, was it a deal? A lot of people got burned the first time around.
Well, I don't know, because I just never gave a fuck. So we had Our manager at the time, Dave Hill, I just left it to him, and from and now we've been with. Is he out there?
Yeah, he's just walking backstage, catching somebody.
And then I've been with Gail Coulson. She does the business now for the last, 15 years or something. And I've never read a contract. I don't care. People say, oh, you'll get ripped off. And I say, you know what? I don't care.
You're here to make music, and you make really good music, and that's what counts.
Yeah, I just don't want to think about that stuff.
I got it.
But what was the question? Have we been... Something about...
Well, the record business has changed considerably, and, you know, you've managed to survive here for 30 years, or 25, however many years it's been you started. And it's one of those things where some bands just could not continue. And even though they had a lot of music left in them to do, the industry was not going to let them do what they wanted to do. And you guys have seemed to pull this thing off pretty miraculously.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know how that works, because you don't have to pay that much attention to the industry. The only thing that really broke my heart was when I came back here and radio had taken such a nosedive. So that's really cheered me up now that, you know, you're doing this and that the radio's back.
Well, one thing feeds off another. Maybe what we do will feed back the other way, and, you know, more music will get played.
Yeah, it's, well, everything's changed a lot, I guess. I guess people, you know, I don't know how it works in record stores or downloading. I've never gone on the internet. I'm not interested in that aspect of it, so I'm just kind of out of it now.
Do you do any kind of, either one of you, in production, digital production, when you go in the studio with your music? And
what does that mean?
Do you get involved? Do you get involved in the production?
Personally, I don't. You know, I go in there to lay some kind of foundation upon which Chrissy can do her thing, which is really the point. Adam's the person.
Again, different records, different things. But no, Martin never lets us down on the drums. But yeah, depending on the record, sometimes Chrissy will have the songs already written just, you know, on an acoustic guitar, and sometimes we won't even bother recording them on a cassette player. We'll just wait till we go in the studio. And then other times we'll actually get the group in and go into a demo studio or a rehearsal room and knock them about. It's really... It all changes. Some things can just happen straight away, and other ones you'll just labour over. I mean, like the box set, there's some numbers on there that never eventually made it out, just because they never made that final turn. There's a track that was like Worlds Within Worlds before.
Yeah. Or, well, I wasn't thinking of that one, but sometimes we did a good recording or something, but then it seemed to, the balance of the record would be, you know,
yeah,
it wouldn't...
Yeah, like California was going to be, there's a track that we did and was going to be on Viva El Amor, but Viva El Amor was kind of, a lot of the tracks were slow, and it was just one of those that got left off. And then when we came back, it was actually pretty good at the time. And then there was a track we did with Bernard Butler, which again was a really good track, but was a slow one.
Yeah. And we know how some people hate ballads, so we have to be real careful, especially with me, you know, going back to Akron more often now. I have to.
So here we have, a life story of your band in a box set. It's got 80 tracks and 20 videos on it. The videos are priceless. I think sometimes you forget how much youth energy goes into the origins of a band until you go back and you actually watch it in action and watch it over the years and watch you guys mature. It's kind of like watching the Led Zeppelin DVD. So Robert Plant is 20 and they I Love Lucy?
Same hair.
But what it does give people is that fans gives them a chance to really discover kind of all of the things that never got played on the radio, that were on those great albums that they bought that may be gathering dust somewhere. So you've really just opened up some doors for people again, and some things people never heard, too. And I'm supposing that Rhino could have done this collection without you getting involved in it at all.
Yeah, I think that would have happened.
Can you kind of walk me through what you thought would come of this if you did get involved in it? Could you guys just, you got to sort out what was there and what wasn't? And
well, Adam and I listened, you know, this Bill Inglot from Rhino, he went through the vaults and found kind of some obscure, well, some tracks that we forgot about. We've done a lot of stuff that we just, you know, have...
Yeah, decided discretion was the best policy.
I didn't really want to have a box set that was just for, like, obsessive fans, of which, you know, there's only three or four, but they already have everything. So it was more of a retrospective, so we tried to include stuff, you know, off the albums and stuff. So, you know, so kind of represent 25 years of pain.
I found the sequencing was pretty interesting. It was, I can tell you that a lot of people knew your band from Brass in Pocket, bought the album, put the needle on the first track, and were immediately taken to a completely different place. Because Precious is really what your band was about, I think, in the beginning. And, you know, side one, cut ones on debut albums sometimes define you for the rest of your career. And it's really interesting on the box set, you start out with a demo of that, which I think is even edgier and punkier.
Well, we also wanted to put a few live things on there because, you know, we've made our mistakes along the way, done things that we would have done differently if we, you know, you do, don't you? So,
yeah, we
were hoping.
Like today.
Yeah, it's like
anything could have happened.
Yeah, but when you're making records, you know, we always, as long as I've been with the band for, you know, it's great. I'm not the new boy anymore because we've now got Nick, who's a good 4 weeks old, and I'm 10 years or something. But
Nick Wilkinson on bass.
Since me and Chrissy and Martin have been having recording sessions together, you always start out with an idea of what you want your record to be, and along the way, you know, you have an idea. Like with Loose Screw, we kind of got a bit fed up of being just a four-piece, and we wanted to try recording a different way, and that makes it interesting for us. And sometimes then afterwards you think, I wish I hadn't done it like that. But you then, if you're lucky, you might think, I'll make another record, and you adjust it. And I think that happens all the way through. You know, you're adjusting to the record you've just made, and you never make what I'm sure Chrissy and Martin still think back to the first album, second album, think like, I wish we'd have done that, or, you know, we hadn't have, you know, had that sound on the snare. Those kind of things happen. So with the box set, it was interesting because when Chrissy and I started listening to it, it was actually, we enjoyed it a bit, didn't we? At first, we didn't think we would. Do you remember when we sat there with Bill Englert and we were like getting ready to go, like, turn it off, we can't take it. But we actually enjoyed listening to it. And that was the start of putting the box set together, that we kind of realised there was a really, you know, a lot of good stuff there. You know, so, and Bill did a great job on it.
The one thing I would add to the pirate radio concept is that, you know, being in a rock band was meant to be kind of like where you could be a renegade and not conform and not have to be part of society and, you know, and just be fucked up for as long as you wanted, forever. And, like, not be inducted into the Hall of Fame or not get any accolades or prizes or anything. Just to be able to stay in the dark and stay out of it and not be in the spotlight all the time. Like being on a pirate ship. And that was kind of my idea. That's how I feel when I'm with my band. And, you know, for years people say, but it's just you because you wrote, you know, why don't you go solo, blah, blah, blah. And, like, for me, there's no interest. I have no interest in myself, really. For me, I would just, if I saw my name on a marquee, I'd just keep walking. I need the band. I've got to have the band. Otherwise, it's no fun for me, so.
Well, you refer to them as a gang pretty often, which is kind of what it is. You guys, is this a gang, a rock and roll gang? I'm going to ask you to play something. I'm going to ask you to play something here in a minute.
That might be good.
Chambers will never talk to me again.
The gang thing, definitely. It's something, unfortunately, with the loss of Jim and Pete after only a few years, that ball that rolls along, that huge, unstoppable thing, which is what you get into, it's a great feeling. You know, it's something you can't define. It really is a special thing, and you're just locked in it because you're committed to it entirely. So it is very much buckets of blood and prepare to repel borders, you know.
There's other places to go. I want to ask you about C.K. Wilson, but I want you to do a song first. You can pick what you like, any place you want to go.
Yeah. What will we do? We'll do Precious and Tattooed Love Bush. Cross the street 'cause you're
still ain't coming into view. Precious.
Pity that you bruise my hip, cause I'm precious.
You should let your manners slip, you're too.
I was a good time.
Pretenders, the XM Artist Confidential. Where'd you learn to play drums? I never did.
I just thought everybody could play. No, true, I never did. Market House, Ross on Wye, 66, 67, and there was a local band member that had bands, and he was forming a new band, and they needed a drummer, and I said, yeah, I can do that. And I'd never touched a drum kit in my life. So it was bullshit. And I went straight in there, and I think within 3 weeks we did our first gig, St. Mary's Church Hall, and Buffin, who later became the drummer with Mott the Hoople, lent me his drum kit for that gig, and our PA blew up, and we had a Selmer PA, and we did two sets, and that was it. Never learned, you know, because if I
feel free to edit this out.
You know, history has a way of just making itself up as it goes along, which is a beautiful thing about rock and roll.
And
you know?
And subsequently, I have never really learned anything. But that's the truth. Like it or lump it.
Whoever would like to step up to the mic here while you have an opportunity. I want to ask Chrissy something about your phrasing and where you learn to phrase the way that you do in music. It is immediately what attracted almost everyone to what you do, and I wonder if there's a model for that in your life. Somebody you listened to who did that.
Maybe, I don't know what my phrasing is, but Jimi Hendrix, kind of a conversational thing.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's you do what you do, the band does what they do, and it all comes together. No, would that be like from a guitar thing, or I don't know? It's just unique.
I don't know what
makes you guys do what you do.
I didn't, I just tried to do the best I could.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Christy. Hey, Martin, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Nice shirt.
Thank you very much. You'll find it on eBay next week.
And it'll be there for the next...
I've seen...
With me inside it.
Okay. I've seen on radio, yeah.
Yeah, welcome to Pirate Satellite.
My question is, what would you be doing if you weren't drumming for the Pretenders?
Better. This is like a Dean Martin celebrity roast in the 70s.
Except it's not very funny. And... He'll find out in a week.
Okay. In answer to your question, I would have ended up in doing some band somewhere. Whether I would have been fortunate enough to find somebody with the great talent of the lady to my left, I don't know. But that's the way it would have been. I would have, you know, because
no,
I knew.
You wouldn't.
So I would have. I would have found somebody.
You are a fucking driving instructor, pal.
This is going to get serious.
If I hadn't pulled you out of your hole, you'd be an absolute nothing.
In 1978, I drove to Hereford and found out from Andy Watt that there were two friends of mine messing about with an American girl. So I found out where they lived and I went over there, right? Now, if those two boys would have been messing about with somebody else,
That's not how it happened.
That is exactly how it happened. Read my book. Anyway, No, that is how it happened. But no, we would have done our thing, you know. I would have succeeded one way or another, you know.
Next not.
Somebody else gets a chance to compliment the shirt while you're at it here.
You guys going to be recording soon?
Probably not.
So that had something to do with the word retire that kind of went by my ear before.
I keep trying to retire.
Well, but why would people give you trouble with this? I mean, you've done your life's work, and you may want to do some more of it somewhere down the line, but what is wrong with that?
Right on, Brother George. Because, I want to goof off and hang out. I've only got, 15 great years left probably in me. Oh, and so, why can't I do what I want to do?
You can't. What do you think that would be? Do you paint?
Yeah.
Front room, mostly.
I don't know. Go somewhere.
Do some things, hang out.
Yeah.
Spend some time with your kids. Do whatever.
Well, maybe not that. Just disappear. Or we might. I don't know. Now that we've finally got a great band, the band is rocking.
Okay. The band is. You guys, when you find new people for the group, which isn't very often, is this like a real traumatic kind of thing? Because they got to fit into not only what you do, but how you see what you do.
It definitely affects the vibe, you know. I mean, you got to hang out with these people when you're on the road. You're in close proximity all the time, so it's got to be right. But Nick's great, and he plays his bass really good. He's got a good-looking bass guitar. And, you know, you just go with it. And he's really put a nice kick up the arse of the rest of us, I think.
You need to give him some counseling on his shirts, but I think that's...
Everyone's playing a lot better since Nick's been on board, aren't they? Yeah. Aren't we?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's...
I say they because I can't really play.
No, it's good because, again, this tour, after doing the box set thing, because Chrissy has been having a break, a well-deserved break. Yeah, that, no, the breakdown's next week. You've been having the break. And so, and it actually put us in the mood for like, oh, this might not be too bad. And then this Austin thing came along, the South by Southwest, which we fancy doing. And we thought, well, we'll tack on a few and just see if we enjoy it. And Nick came along. But again, we decided live we were not going to have any keyboards and we wasn't going to make it fancy or anything. We were just going to be a four-piece rock group and, you know, and keep it kind of open and fresh.
And I think we really owe a lot to the Kings of Leon because I went and saw them. In fact, Dave Hill gave me their record. He turned me on to them first. And then I went and saw them and I thought, fuck, that's what we're supposed to be like. And then I actually met them and I said, hey, you guys, thanks for getting me through the last couple of years. And one of them said, thanks for getting us through high school.
Perfect.
But they did. They really changed my, you know, I realized that we kind of drifted away from what it's really about. Because, you know, you're getting on with your life and stuff's happening and, you know, you're going through your traumas and, you know, working with Martin. And so, and you can kind of, you know, drift out to sea.
Bye. That's the pirate bit. Yeah, we were drifting. But yeah, it's good to just be a rock and roll band again. And we've kept it deliberately open and a bit of fun.
Well, if you don't keep her from retiring, then he's got the shortest bass gig in rock and roll.
But the most enjoyable he's ever, Laura Lex.
That's true. Hi.
Hi. My name is Sharon, and the question is for Chrissy. From the moment I first heard Stop Your Sobbing on the radio, followed by Brass in Pocket, I was totally bowled over by the sound of your voice, the intensity of your words. What I'd like to know is, where do you get the inspiration and where do you pull the balls to do what you do now, time after time, with all the energy that you have? It's amazing, and I love it. And you can't retire. I'll be in my grave first.
Oh, yes, I can. Yeah, well, you know, thanks for listening and stuff. Where do I get the... I don't know. I just didn't want to be a waitress. And you just... I wanted to play guitar in a band. I wanted to be in a band. And then when that punk phenomenon happened in London where I was, it seemed like I could kind of get in a band. And the fact that I was a chick wasn't going to be a big novelty. I could kind of sneak in there and do my thing and... I thought maybe I was too old for it, but, you know, it seemed like you could just about do anything then. So that was kind of a liberating moment, I think, for a lot of people. But I was a little too musical to actually be in a real punk band. But it's still the thing I love the most, and, I mean, my playing is very punk. It's not very, technically, very good.
You fell in with, you know, the ones that became...
Dead?
Dead. The kind of the standard bearers of that whole thing, which was, you know,
yeah,
the Clash and... Mm-hmm. and the Sex Pistols and all those guys were hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in Johnny's reaction to going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was piss in your wine glasses, we're not showing up. You guys are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Is this an honor? Is this?
For me, it was a way of saying goodbye to Jim and Pete. I've been carrying their banner for a long time, as indeed the band had, you know. So really, that was it for me.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Alex. Collectively, thanks for 30 years of great music, and especially to Martin and Chrissy. Martin, it's good to see you've been true to your sideburns all these years.
Yeah, thank you. I keep them by the bed.
And I have a question for Chrissy. Do you still have your first telly? What model was it?
Don't mention my telly.
I think that might be this one here, which Adam's now playing.
That's and your, that's your
Danny,
one?
Danny, can you tell the story about what you discovered the other day? Danny's our guitar tech.
It was giving Adam a little bit of jip the other day when we were trying to play it, choking out on some of the frets. So I had to take the neck off the guitar, and underneath it found that its birthday is February the 3rd, 1966. There you go.
So that makes it a what, girls?
Aquarius.
Aquarius?
It's an Aquarius.
An Aquarian.
Just putting it.
Why did you gravitate towards tellies? Do you like? What do you prefer about tellies all these years?
I don't know. I just got used to it.
Fair enough.
And you know, that feels good.
Did you start on electric? Some people start on electric guitars.
No, I had like a baritone ukulele when I was about, I don't know. I was, hey, not everyone here gets to be a rock star, remember that.
And just
then
up.
I got some big acoustic thing. I think it was called a Zimgar. It was a, you know, some Japanese acoustic guitar. And then I had a K electric. And then I had a little melody maker at some point. Yeah, it went on.
Did you, I'm just curious about the songs that you emulated at first. You just picked stuff off the radio and play stuff? You know, folk, were you into folk music? Were you into what?
Well, my girlfriend and I kind of thought we were like the Smothers Brothers of at the time. We had our little acoustic jamborees. But I couldn't really play that good. I'd never played along to records because I didn't have the chops, I guess. And I was too shy to, you know, get together with the guys that were in the art room who used to go over to someone's house on the weekends and play. I would never have let them see me play. So I had to kind of make up my own songs to play anything. And then I also really liked singing, so I found with just a couple of chords, you can make any kind of melody around two chords.
You got a pretty good talent for a turn of phrase. She writes some great songs. You do, you have...
Thanks.
You probably don't do it anymore, but was there a place that you had to do that? You know, some guys ride on the tour bus or wherever, but was there, or it just came?
I can't tell you all my secrets, and then everyone would do it.
That's right. However.
No, I don't know. You just get depressed, you know, and then you just pick up the guitar, and you're just trying to get your head straight.
It's
that sort of thing, you know.
There you go.
You don't want to know, believe me.
Well, from some of the songs we might guess.
I'm so depressed at the moment, I should probably come out with an album in the next week. See, you do like to see me suffer, don't you?
A couple of more songs. Can we get that from you?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I always do this at the end of this. This is just to wind things up. And any of you can pick this up. Just thumbnail sketches of people you know who influenced you. We're kind of doing this great audio rock and roll book. And the first one I always ask about is Bob Dylan. How he influenced you, a sentence or two?
Probably as much as anyone ever has, definitely. With his conversational way of telling his stories and his really unique singing style, if you want to call it a style, and his, you know, just always doing his own thing and always being there for us and always, you know, going his own way and being a renegade and, you know.
Well, this will have to be for you, I think, Annie Lennox. I just find that she is, next to you, probably the most incredible singer out there.
Well, she is that, that's for sure. She's a better singer than me. She's been a great friend, you know, so I know her so well personally. I think of her more as a friend. Her artistry is actually, you know, secondary to my
Well, for me, it's, the bottom line for all of this, what we've talked about really, is the groove, and it's about playing, it's the performance on a stage. And I've always loved to see great people perform. It's okay, the recordings, la la la, but when you see them live, that's the thing to do. And, you know, there's been John Bonham, Keith Moon, those type of players who were immaculate. They had their thing, and ultimately that's what each performer would like to get, is their thing. And hopefully, you know, we've got a sound that's fucking great.
They've got their thing. I want to thank you for coming by. I know that this could be treacherous and tortuous sometimes, but it's much appreciated. Wherever your roads take you, you know, the best of luck to whatever you do, and you should be able to do whatever.
Thanks for bringing radio back, because that's it is the best thing.
Pirate Satellite.
Thanks for everyone, you know, for supporting us.
Thank you.
We're gonna pass. It's fucking. The bottle. I'm gonna use it. Intention. I've been driving a detour leaning. No reason. Seems so pleasing. I'm gonna make you, make you, make you notice. I'm gonna use my, gonna use my legs. Gonna use my style. Gonna use my sexy. Gonna use my fingers. Gonna use my, my legendary.
Wilkinson, Adam Seymour, Martin Chambers, Chrissy Hynde, The Pretenders.
Thank you, George. Thank you, everybody. See you soon.
And don't forget to keep rocking.
Still a punk.
Excellent. XM's Artist Confidential.
This XM exclusive music original presentation was recorded and performed at Irving Plaza in New York City, with thanks to Gail Colson at Gale Force Management, John Adams at Rhino, and Daniel Glass from Artemis Records, plus Randy Israti, Mark Whiff Smith, and the production crew and management at Irving Plaza. Music engineered and mixed by John Harris at XM Productions FNL Music, assisted by Peter Gary, Artie Kemsani, and Joel Singer. Post-producer Aaron Lee.
XM operatives on this program include George Taylor Morris, Jamie Karp, Chris Bonavia, Dan Turner, Lee Abrams, and Hugh Panero.
And we thank the Pretenders for the definitive pirate radio. Artist Confidential is produced exclusively by XM Satellite Radio.